Blog Talk Radio.
Midnight, one more night without sleeping. Watching till the morning comes creeping. Green door, what's that secret you're keeping?
There's an old piano and they play it hot behind the green door. Don't know what they're doing, but they laugh a lot behind the green door. Wish they let me in so I could find out what's behind the green door.
Not once tried to tell them I've been there. Door slammed. Hospitality's been there. Wonder just what's going on in there.
Welcome to another edition of Repo Nerds, a spinoff of the Archivist Bets on Sexy Witches podcast. And I am the head huntress. Hello, everybody out there in Radio Land. This is the head huntress here with Repo Nerds. We've been kind of slacking on the Repo Nerds this season. This is only our second episode. But I'm sure, as all of you know, there's been some distractions in the real world from our movie watching. But at the same time, we also have a chance to do a lot of catch-up, too, in some cases. I don't, but that's another story. But first, before we go into all of our stuff tonight, let me bring on my Repo Nerd co-host from Charleston, West Virginia. Please meet and welcome my Wizard of Wandling, Steve, the Wizard of Wandling. Thank you for being on the show, sir.
Oh, hey, it's good to be here. I'm glad that we're doing it tonight.
It's been a while.
Seems appropriate.
So last time we crammed four movies.
The world was still moving.
Yeah, they was. Yeah, we were doing. It's a great episode. It's about weird movies that are weird as cats, and you know, including Popeye and Eric the Viking and the Cabin Boy. So those were some silly films. This week, though, we originally were going to do an Alejandro Jodorowsky episode, which we will do at some point, I promise you. But because the world decided to go to shit, we've decided to put that aside for the while until I have some time to actually really deep dive and do what I want. And instead, we decided to trade two of our favorite movies. One of them was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and that's Steve's favorite movie from 2019. And so it's the only Quentin Tarantino film I think that I haven't seen. So I watched that, and I gave Steve Wandling Dolls from 1987 from the recently deceased master of horror himself, Stuart Gordon. By the way, just so people know, we know this, that Quentin Tarantino is also on the Masters of Horror list, believe it or not.
That's true.
So we have two Masters of Horror tonight to talk about. But first, a lot of us have quarantine on our minds, as you may know. And, I am unfortunately essential, so that means I have to go in. So I have not been watching very many movies. I have been binging The Good Place, though. I just finished season one of that. It's pretty good so far. I just started season two. So I am watching something. But
that show brings me up a little bit. It makes me feel better and forget, you know, quarantine sometimes. It's good for that, I think.
I was really surprised. We have Erin Marie's oldest daughter is here helping us out with Grandpa during the pandemic. And it's kind of interesting because I didn't realize Ted Danson still got it. She's like all afledged for Ted Danson. I was really surprised. No,
really?
Even with the gray hair, he's considered still super sexy. Something about Ted Danson's staying power. Yeah, I know. I found that interesting. A whole new generation is discovering the hotness of Ted Danson.
It makes me feel young. It's good.
Excellent. and so I want, we're going to, we always do a recommend segment on Repo Nerds. And so I, mm-hmm. I thought, Steve, that we would talk about our favorite quarantine or an unusual quarantine movie you'd like to recommend
right.
while we're, and then like a binge, something that you would, a good long binge for a TV series that would be, you'd recommend either as a box set or something on Netflix. So, well, would you like to go first?
Sure. I'd love to. For the film, for a quarantine film, I've always been really partial anyway to George Romero. One of his, I think it's a lot better known now, but it was a pretty big flop when it came out, The Crazies. It was remade, but I haven't seen that remake. But the original, if you haven't seen it, just briefly, it feels a lot like Night of the Living Dead in a sense, but it's got a lot more of a science fiction bent to it. And there's a biological weapon let loose in rural USA, probably Pennsylvania, and the military comes in and it kind of splits its time between the military and how they're trying to quarantine this town off and not really do nice things to the survivors, and the rest of the time spent with these people that are trying to escape the quarantine. So it's pretty good. I would recommend it.
I've seen both movies, I believe, but believe it or not, the one I know better is the 2010 remake. And the only reason why I know it better is because Timothy Oliphant's in it. And once again, dreamy man. I watch anything that Timothy Oliphant
He's
is
awesome.
In. I was very pleased when I was watching Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and he came up in the film. That made me very happy. And in one of the better scenes in the movie, too, which is awesome because he gets to do a Western scene with Leo. It's just cool. And actually, the remake's pretty good. I think you would like it. It's a standalone film. It's pretty okay. But anything Romero does, I think, works as a recommender in a pandemic, right?
Oh, yeah. I think that definitely there's probably better. There's probably, I didn't even think about that, but you're right. It's kind of his wheelhouse.
It's definitely his wheelhouse. I mean, what? The only, except for Knight Riders and Monkey Shines, maybe, but most of his other movies are pandemics or zombies. So, Martin still works as an infection parable, too. So, so Mr.
That's
Romero.
That's a great movie.
Yeah, Martin's
That's
fucked up.
Movie.
I like Martin.
Yeah,
so
that one actually disturbs me a little bit still.
I went a little bit more obscure. This isn't the best quarantine film, but I think it's an overlooked one. And I actually think it's aging well, especially considering our pandemic. This is actually probably closer to the truth. And it's A24's 2017's It Comes at Night, which is directed by an indie director named Trey Edward Schultz. It's a story about a family who lives out in the woods by themselves in relative isolation during a pandemic. We don't know exactly what happens. We know it's some kind of illness that you don't recover from, and it's pretty nasty and contagious. You can't tell, but they never quite explain to you exactly what kind of virus it is. It could be airborne. It could be surface. We can't tell. Either way, it's not really about the virus itself. Once again, like Romero movies, Steve. Romero movies are never as good as the zombies. They're always as good as the actors, right? So,
and
that's what this is about. It's about a family, and another family with a kid comes through. And does their empathy and humanity prevail, or does their survival instincts prevail? It's a very bleak. I'm not saying it's a fun ride. It's not. It is very, very bleak and very, very nihilistic. Some people call it a slow burn. I don't think that's fair.
I thought it was intense.
yeah. But it's because it's very intimate story, and so I think that one right now, I've been going through my head, and a lot of people have been like Contagion by Soderbergh because there's the whole bat thing in that, and but of all these films, I actually think this one might be the closest to what's really happening now.
Oh, I think that even thinking about that movie makes me feel slightly uncomfortable. It's really effective. I remember the critical response to that was I really liked it. I'm with you, but I just remember for some reason, I think it makes people uncomfortable because, like you said, I think it really does kind of hit close to reality.
Oh, completely. Because it is about human nature and the decisions people make,
right.
You know, they make a couple of very controversial decisions in this movie.
true.
This movie gets a little bashed, I think, because it got associated with the term elevated horror. When it came out, it and Vitch were the ones that he reasoned it for, which is bullshit. Horror is horror. There's smart horror out there. Yes, I will be first to admit, Steve. Oh my God, I am so first to admit that sometimes you have to dig through the shit to find a gem in horror. There's a lot of crap
of
out
course.
There. But
yeah,
our
I'll
gems
admit
are.
To that.
Oh my God. But our gems are beautiful. And shiny, sometimes warped and cracked,
right.
But they're always shiny. Sometimes it's
always.
Blood red. Sometimes it's black.
It's worth the hunt. It's worth like the dive.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And A24 may be my favorite company right now. I know Neon is the hot shit because of Parasite. Believe me, Neon deserves the accolades it's getting for its distribution company. I still love A24. And here's a tip. Do you have a Roku device, Steve?
I do. That's what I have. That's what I use.
Do you use Canopy.com with a K?
No, I do not.
Ah, okay. So here's a tip.
Am I missing out?
Yeah, you absolutely are. If you have a library card and your library is participating, Canopy.com is a free service. And you can log in and sign up for it if you have a library card, and then you get access to 30,000 titles. A lot of them are dry, I'll admit, like documentaries and things like that and classic movies. But get this.
Sure.
The A24 catalog is on there for free.
Oh, that's reason enough right there.
Absolutely.
Love A24.
Oh
yeah,
my God.
That's
awesome. Canopy.com.
That's a good tip.
High recommend on that app.
Canopy with a K.
With a K.
I got it.
Bad news is that the Roku search doesn't search that app. So you have to go in and search it yourself if you're looking for a title. But if it's an older A24 release, it's probably there. Mother was dropped there. I saw Mother. I watched Mother on there, and I watched that Ethan Hawke priest environmental terrorist movie.
Oh,
I forget the name of it right now.
First Reformed.
Yeah, First Reformed. That's where I watched it before the Oscars.
Yeah, I like that. I like that movie. I only saw that once. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, it was pretty good. And there's some honest dialogue in that movie. So that's another movie that almost is timely. It's First Reformed, even though it's not about pandemic, but it is about the climate change and the environment. So that would be a good choice, too. So First Reformed by A24.
Absolutely.
So there's two A24s for the price of one.
That's right. It's been Canopy.com. That's awesome.
Yeah.
You can't beat A24's catalog just at your fingertips.
When I found out that was on there, I was in total and utter shock. I was like, A24 catalog. And I just started binging
I don't have everything.
I was like,
I don't have close
brilliant.
To everything.
That,
I've just now pretty
what?
Much.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, go
ahead.
I
was
just
saying,
we jinx. Okay. I was saying that I love that A24 this is one of the reasons why they're my favorite companies, because they do shit like this.
Absolutely. And I mean, not everybody's going to do that at all. So, and they really make probably, I mean, it's one of those studios I remember back in the, a little bit further back, like Focus Features used to really excite me for a time period, probably 10, 12 years ago. And that's what it reminds me of. I just, everything they put out, I really want to see. So that makes it easy.
Yeah, no, totally. Moonlight is also an A24. It's on there, you know. So, I mean, there's a good list of films. So go to Canopy.com if you have a library card. If you don't, you should have one, you know.
Yeah,
and that's something you can do. Go binge some free library movies. Speaking of binges, before we give our recommendations for a TV series worth binging while they're in the quarantine, there is something we should be binging very soon. I don't know if you saw on the news today, but South by Southwest is going to release their film festival online through Amazon for 10 days. You have to sign
up. I really couldn't believe that.
Good news is that they did put in the press release that the people who put the movie, anybody that has a film that they're releasing gets a screening fee, because a lot of people were worried about that. So they do get the filmmakers will get paid, which is good. You
that
can sign up.
Super good.
It's in front of the paywall, so you don't have to have an Amazon Prime account for this, which is amazing. But you do have to sign up for it. They haven't given it a date, but 10 days to binge their festival. I don't remember what was on the lineup except for Quiet Place 2. That's the only one I seem to remember being on there. So that might be worth it right there. I don't know what else is on the list.
I didn't even know that. That's great. See, I'm learning new stuff all night here. That's great.
But isn't that amazing?
I didn't know.
I know, because
it's not like I get to go to South by Southwest usually, you know?
No, and always their midnight lineup at South by Southwest is usually so good. I can't wait to like deep dive some films from, you know, I'm going to be up way late watching those movies, but absolutely worth a quarantine binge. So,
that's the perfect quarantine.
And I'm going to go first in my TV binge, because I know it's going to be something we both completely 100% agree on. If you want to watch something that's timely, ages well, has great stars, great fashion, and 8 seasons, I would highly recommend, if you've never done it, binging the TV series Buffy the Vampire Slayer, starring Sarah Michelle Gellar. I think that when I was sick, I binged that show. So it was actually the perfect thing to binge. It is fun. It's exciting. It's aging pretty well. The fashions are 90s, but all the best kinds, early 2000s, late 90s fashion. So what do you think of my choice of a TV binge?
Oh, gosh. It's something that I try to avoid talking about because I think it's a great choice, but I've never done it. I've never gone through Buffy like that.
I'm still going through Twin Peaks. You're going to have to go through Buffy. Now, granted, there's less episodes, but arguably, I think it's harder to watch Twin Peaks than Buffy. You can burn through Buffy episodes.
You may have a point.
So.
You can't burn through season. I don't think it's easy to burn through season 2 of Twin Peaks. I think season 2 is obvious why they got canceled.
It's been a slog to get to season 2 for me.
Yeah, season 1, I think I breezed right through. And there's also a drastically like upticked number of episodes in season 2. But season 2, Lynch and Frost kind of abandoned it because ABC kept moving the schedule around. And so the storylines get really, you can tell that it's not the same people put, you know, behind the scenes. So,
one of the composers of Twin Peaks died this week.
Oh, and yeah, Christoph, Badalamenti is still alive, but the guy from the Christoph Penderecki, is that his name? Penderecki? Is that how you say his name?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I know he's. Yeah, we'd have to look up his name, but he was a Polish composer, and he was one of Lynch's go-to men. So rest in peace there.
He had, his stuff was crazy sounding too. I remember on The Return, they had that infamous like nuclear bomb scene where just keeps going on inside this explosion, and it's just got all these shrieking violins is what I think of, because I think he had music in The Shining or something, one of the big horror films in the 70s too, and it just, I always think of that, like just shrieking violins is what he kind of sounds like. So it's very unsettling, you know.
Well, at some point, I think we should do a Repo Nerds, and it'll be a long-term one because you have to do all 8 seasons of Buffy.
I'm glad that you.
I think you would really enjoy the show. It's addictive. It's absolutely one of the most addictive. Now, the first season is episodic. Like, there's no overarching storyline to the first season, really, other than her discovering that she's. Yeah, but season 2, you start actually having still episodic episodes and standalone episodes, but overall overarching storylines. So every season has a larger goal. The first 3 seasons are kind of perfect. Like, that is the perfect 90s show right there. Boom. Season 4 is surprisingly good, but it's a little bit uneven. Same with 5, like they were trying to find their footing, but season 4 has some of the best episodes ever of Buffy, like written and also introduced the character of Tara, which was a huge fan favorite. Willow and Tara was one of the first positive lesbian couples on television, so it was nice to see him introduce Tara. Yeah, and Tara is also first positive Wiccans that I know of, one of the first ones. Yeah, so, season 4 has an episode called Hush, which is, even if you didn't watch the rest of the season, Steve, go and watch that episode. It won't give anything away, because it's not standalone, but it introduces Tara, but at the same time, it sits on itself, and it's a fairy tale episode where the gentlemen they come around and nobody can speak. So everyone is using music and and gestures and stuff get through this fairy tale menace called the gentlemen who rip the hearts out of people when you can't scream. It's pretty cool.
Oh, that's good. I love adult really fairy good. Tales too. So
yeah, you know, so that was a pretty cool episode. Season 2, it introduces Spike, which is like James Martis, which is like amazing.
I am familiar
amazing.
With Spike.
Yeah,
I'm familiar with Spike, just through memes and stuff.
Bad Angel, spoiler alert, that's the season where Buffy sleeps with her boyfriend for the first time and he turns evil. pretty much. And Spike and so it's a terrible teenage years. So there's a lot of great things. 5 is weird. There's a Dracula episode. And then 6 is even weirder. It does kind of goes off the rails because Buffy actually dies at the end of season 6. Comes back in 7, and then there's an 8th episode. And it kind of from season 7 and 8 kind of go off the rails, but season 7 has the Once More with Feeling episode. That's the musical episode, which is actually really funny. You also have one of my favorite actors, Anthony Stewart Head, plays her mentor, Giles, who eventually will go on to star in Repo the Genetic Opera, which is a part he was meant to play. It was written for him, even.
It's written for him.
Yeah, it was. Willow, I just think that it's a really good pandemic binge. So 8 seasons of fun. So, what is your recommendation?
Okay, I went back and forth on a couple before I finally noticed that apparently HBO has unlocked their streaming service for people right now online. You don't have to have a subscription to watch a lot of their shows that are on. And just looking at some of their – if you're in the mood, for something fun, like, to get your mind off, like, I was thinking of The Good Place, I'm not really someone that watches a lot of comedy. That's kind of the genre I lack the most on. But what am I latch on to when I do? And I just have to say that I finally settled on Veep to tell people to watch because
Veep.
It's hilarious. Yes. And it will take your mind off things. It's one of the funniest, like every line in Veep from every character. I don't know if you watch it, but if you watched it now that it's sadly over, the first season, like you said with Buffy, isn't exactly as good as the rest of it. So you kind of got to hang in there. But once they find their footing in Veep, pretty much near the end of the first season, you've got so many character actors. I'm forgetting the names of a lot of these guys, but I know Gary Cole shows up. Hugh Laurie shows up. Tony Hale's on there. The girl that played, I'm forgetting her name, but when she was younger, she was in My Girl. She was My Girl. But they are all just like, and of course, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, they're all the quippiest, funniest people. And there's a lot of other comedic faces that are just pros. And it's got some of the meanest dialogue I've ever heard in my life. Some of the craziest insults that you would never say in the workplace that they just throw around in government. And it's got this kind of real cynical, funny take on the people that run this country that, you know, is probably truer than some people would care to admit that, you know, they're just kind of the idiots maybe running things. And it's really funny. These people are all like the worst people. And right now I just have been thinking more of more fun things that aren't necessarily quite as heavy as some stuff I would normally watch just to laugh or, you know, be scared. Something that's just a little more like junk food, I guess. But Veep's smart. But anyway, it's great. And that's all I can really say. It's just really, really funny. And I think there's 5, maybe 6, maybe more seasons of it. It went on for a while, so, you know, get past that first season, and it gets a lot funnier.
Great. We have a caller, Steve.
Whoa.
Yay.
So, awesome.
So let's call him up. So, area code 734, you're on with the Repo Nerds.
Can you hear me?
Hello? Yes, I can.
Yay.
Hi.
Hello.
It's Jamie. Like you all know.
Hi, Jamie. How you doing?
Hey.
What's up?
Yeah.
Thank you for calling. How are you during the mild apocalypse?
Wonderful. I've colored 9,000 coloring books, and my cat has no hair because I pet her to death. Good time.
I honestly think our pets are going to get us through this. Maybe that's what you need, Steve. You need a pet.
I do. I need a new pet. It's so sad. My cat died. That's what I was gonna say.
Aww.
But, I need a new kid. It was like a year ago. It wasn't. You know. I've grieved. I've moved on. Yeah. I just need a new one. You're good. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So Jamie, what do you have a binge recommendation for the moderate apocalypse here?
Yes, but I don't want to give a final answer yet. So
okay.
I've not seen Buffy, so I'm going to take that and watch it. I've seen the movie, which I don't think is anything like the series, right?
Not really, but I love both for different reasons. And Luke Perry, oh my God, which by the way, I was really happy to see him in.
I do love that movie.
Yeah, I was so happy to see him in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's funny, every time I see Luke Perry now, I just, and my husband too, we both look at each other and go, aww. We're so sad he's dead.
It is.
You know, it's really, I mean, it's funny. Like there's so many. I don't know why Luke Perry one is the one that makes us so.
Because he was Dylan.
Oh yeah, he was. I mean, he was like the James Dean of this. You know, when I was a kid, that's how people looked at him. I just think of him on that motorcycle, and
yeah.
He was like the fountain of youth.
Yep, that bastard. <I'm joking. laughs>
Right.
So I'm going to watch Doctor Who. What is it? Doctor Who? I've never seen any of that. So
me
I'll
either.
Be trying that. Yay, there you go. There's an idea. But that's not like horror-y, I guess. Is it?
I think it can get a little scary sometimes. Somebody told me that. I don't know. But I don't think it is all the time. Maybe Elizabeth knows. Is Elizabeth on here? Jamie, you still there?
Maybe not. I'm still here.
Oh no, yeah, she got dropped. She'll be, I'm sure she'll be back in a second. But
okay.
So yeah, Doctor Who is something. I've seen one episode of Doctor Who, and that
Which one did you see?
The premiere with Jodie Comer. I was like, of all times to watch it, and I thought it was all right.
So I didn't.
Everything with that.
I don't even know which season that is. Is that the original? Original?
No, are you going that far back? See, I wouldn't even
know
where to begin to go that far back. Well, I think there's like one. I think there's one consistent show that you can maybe binge through Netflix that keeps going up till now. That's maybe a decade old.
Wow.
That's where I would start. But I'm no expert on Doctor Who. Maybe somebody else out there can help you out on that. That seems.
You know Kathleen Marshall, in our group.
I do. Yeah.
She posted for me a thread, and there are tons of comments on there. And I think they do go further back than the decade one. So I'll decide which one to start with, maybe from there. We'll see.
It seems like you're working on a thesis almost. It's like I saw where CBS All Access has every Star Trek series, and I've never really dove into that. I know, right? I was like, man, can you imagine a quarantine? Every Star Trek episode, every series binge, and I've never, like I said, I've seen some of the movies, but you know, that's about it.
Yeah, that's a major undertaking, I would say.
Yeah,
oh,
I think I would come.
Can you hear me?
Hey.
Yes, hi. Hey, I'm sorry about that. I got kicked out of the system, so
I didn't do it. Is it
shocked,
because I called in?
No, I have no idea. It's Blog Talk. This happens at least, once a week? Once a show?
It happens.
Practically? Oh, such annoying. Anyway, I'm back, and I'm sorry I missed everything. So, sum up real quick. Where are we at?
We saw
while
you were gone.
Yeah, that's it. We're all going out. Yeah, it's all solved. No, we were talking about Doctor Who. She was wondering what's a good place to start.
I recommend starting with the tenth with the fourth Doctor.
Is that the Tennant? The Tennant?
Tom Baker.
Okay. Okay.
So that was the Doctor. He's got the longest run of episodes and the most variants and some of the more famous companions. So I would start with the fourth Doctor, with Tom Baker.
Okay.
So, be easy, Elizabeth. I told you Elizabeth would know.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you want to start with the modern one, a lot of people, because some of them will be the first to admit that some of the special effects in the earlier episodes is pretty hokey. I would recommend starting with Christopher Eccleston. Which is one before Day of the Tenet. He only had six episodes, but Rose was introduced in those episodes, and so is John Barrowman's character, the captain, who eventually goes on to do Torchwood.
John Barrowman.
So I would recommend starting with Eck for the modern ones. But Tom Baker for the original, and Eck for the modern version. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Which one was there? I don't know if there are multiple ones, but the one episode I've seen had, I think they're called the Weeping Angels, where you like have to look at them or they'll come and like eat you.
Those are the modern ones. First of all, Weeping Angels are terrifying.
Right?
I believe those are start with David Tennant, right? I believe those are David Tennant episodes.
That is a clip I have seen, and that is David Tennant.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So I'll go back before that then.
Yeah. One doctor before David Tennant. Go to Chris Eccleston. He has actually, even though he's only got a few episodes, he's actually one of my favorite doctors because he's a little different than the rest of the doctors. That doctor lived through the Dalek apocalypse and is the last of his kind. So it's a little bit different than the other doctors. He's a little darker. He's the emo Doctor Who.
Well, that's cool. I like the sound of that.
Yeah.
What about Matt Smith? What about Matt Smith, though?
He's perfectly good doctor. Just keep going through David Tennant right through Matt Smith. Just, you know, if you want to do the modern one, start with Eck and just go all the way through.
There you go.
Is there a lady doctor now?
Yeah, that's the last one. And she has, what, 1.5 seasons under her belt now? I got to see her at San Diego Comic-Con 2 seasons ago. That was really neat. Yeah, there's the lady Doctor Who, and she's perfectly good Doctor Who, and she's an excellent choice. Jodie Benson.
Yay,
lady. Yeah, so that's awesome. I had no issues with a female Doctor Who, though I do have a little bit of an issue with a female James Bond.
Idris Elba would be amazing. I've been saying that since I first saw Luther a few years ago. I just think he'd be great.
I think so too. So I mean, I was never a negative about Daniel Craig ever. I thought Daniel Craig was. You want to watch I saw a film a few years before he got the job called Layer Cake,
and
a great movie. Great movie.
Yeah. And so I knew when he gave him the job as Bond, I'm like, I saw this movie, he's going to be perfect.
I think he is perfect.
Yeah, so I he's a really strange doctor. He's not as, like dead in there as some of his predecessors, Daniel Craig, but
right.
I think he's total badass, so it's cool. Well,
yeah,
thank
I think
you, Jamie, for calling.
Connie, thank you for listening.
And listen, one thing that it's not bingeable, but it's available right now. It's called Bloodline, and it's got Stifler, and I just watched it. It was really freaking
good.
So
yeah,
I recommend
he plays
it
against type as like a serial killer, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, good time.
And I believed his crazy ass. I like it.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Well,
no, he sells
good.
It really well.
Excellent. I've
it would make
good
a good double
that
feature
that
with Mr. Brooks. If anybody remembers Mr. Brooks. Yeah.
Yeah,
I do.
Well, thank you, Jamie. We're going to talk about our first lesson now. So if you want to listen, you're welcome to do that. So,
thank you,
which one, Jamie, before you go, which one of us should go first? Should he talk about dogs first, or should I talk about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
It doesn't matter. I'm going to try to listen to all of it, but I'm going to hang up and then go back into the blog radio, so it might take a second.
All right. Well, you have a good one.
See you, Jamie.
Thank you again for calling, Jamie.
Thank
Talk
you.
To you later. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Elizabeth? One second, I'm not sure I'm still in the air. Oh, okay, I am still in the air. I wasn't sure. I don't hear any. All right, so my pick, the film that was recommended to me from Elizabeth, while she handles a little bit technical stuff, was the recently passed Master of Horror, Stuart Gordon. I have always been a huge Reanimator fan and a From Beyond fan, you know, a lot of his more Lovecraft adaptations. And I really am not sure if I even was aware before he died and I looked at his full filmography if he had anything to do with Dolls. It came out in 1987, and it may feel like it's kind of a Puppet Master type film just by the marketing and the poster. That's what I always thought. But going into it, I discover it's a completely different type of movie. It's an adult fairy tale. The real kind of like I think I'm back on.
You are back on.
I'm back on.
Too.
Okay.
We're back on.
That's great. We're both here.
I hope
we're
there's
here.
Still people with us. We're still here.
I do too.
Hi,
I was
oh my God, there,
I was just
there,
floating
there.
In deep space.
Terrifying.
I
oh
felt
my God.
So alone.
So we both got dropped. I got dropped and then I saw you get dropped and I'm like, God, it wouldn't let me call back in.
I didn't think it. I was afraid of that.
Yeah. So here I am.
I was just floating out on my own. I didn't feel
all
normal.
All right. So let's talk about Dolls first, because I'm sure we're going to have a lot more to talk about it once upon a time in Hollywood, because there's a lot to unpack there. So you've seen a lot of Stuart Gordon movies, but you had never seen Dolls.
Nope, I always avoided that movie. Like I said a minute ago, I don't know if you could hear me, but I didn't realize that was. I remember the case from my childhood video store and whatnot, but I never knew it was a Stuart Gordon film till he died.
Which I told you.
So that was it.
Yeah,
when you were like, hey, watch Dolls, man. It's awesome. Because, and then it is, I just, you know, from the marketing of that movie, the poster, just growing up, it just seemed like another Puppet Master film, which I think a lot of people may think that it, you know, was, but it's a different type of movie. That's for sure. And I don't, it's got the great haunted kind of house feel to it. I think that the settings are really pretty and, you know, very well shot and look great. It's got a very almost gothic feel to it, but it's more fairy tale. And the older couple in the film that own the house, they're great. And a lot of this, I feel really bad for the little girl in that movie, actually, or her dad and his wife are so mean that I almost didn't feel bad for these characters when, like, I kind of thought it was a funny but also surprisingly brutal kind of murder scenes when they happen there. It does kind of, Stuart Gordon always kind of goes sometimes big with things, and he has that, there's a couple reveals in the movie, like the girl with the baby doll head and the whole where she's under the covers and he's trying to wake her up in bed and she's just bleeding out, you know. And I thought a lot of that stuff did feel like Stuart Gordon, and I was pleasantly surprised with it. I thought it was it's a really good addition to any, especially horror fans, kind of collection, and should check it out.
I absolutely adore this movie. It's on my top 10 favorite horror films. I think it's number 4 or number 5 on my list.
That's a serious look, too.
Obviously, yeah. I'm not going to take anything away from Reanimator. That is a fun fucking movie. I have the signed poster downstairs. Stuart Gordon was one of the first people I met at a horror convention, one of the first canned pictures I ever took. I'm a huge fan of Stuart Gordon, but I love Dolls more. I love Dolls more than Reanimator. I think it's pitch perfect almost all the way through. I'm always had a soft spot for fairy tale horror, and this is probably the penultimate fairy tale horror film. I mean, you've got the dark and stormy castle, and you've got killer dolls and witches, and you know, it's everything you would want in a fairy tale. You know, and also the villains are blurred though, which makes it different than other films because the witches aren't necessarily bad guys.
Right. They're not. They're kind of the moral arbiters of the movie, you know.
Yeah, they punish the wicked. They're that kind of witch. You want some trivia about this movie?
Absolutely.
Now, some of this is relatively common knowledge, but it's always good to remind people. First of all, this is obviously a Charlie Band film from the Empire era, which is when he had a bunch of movies in a row. Brian Usna, who's on in Direct Society, which is a Reclaimers episode, by the way, he did this movie and he did, Reanimator and From Beyond. And those three films were shot back to back to back. Reanimator was first, I believe. Dolls was second, and From Beyond was third. So Dolls came out third because Dolls had more effect shots because of stop animation in that movie. Puppet Master movies are a little on the cheap side. They did not skimp on the stop animation for Dolls. And Dolls and From Beyond were shot in the same house, by the way.
Well, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
So those three films are really, like, you really should have them on a shelf together.
because they kind of are the indicative of the pinnacle of what Charlie Band's peak of his success. And Stuart Gordon was right there, the one making him look good. Anytime Stuart Gordon collaborated with Charlie Band ended up looking great. So.
Oh, definitely. Looks great.
I mean, he went on to do Castle Freak also, you know, and
oh,
Dagon,
that's a good
right?
Looking film too.
So,
yeah.
I also love Carolyn Freak Gordon, who I also met, his wife, who's absolutely the most villainous woman in this movie. She's like so
Oh, that's
scary.
Stuart Gordon's wife?
That's Stuart Gordon's wife, yep. Carolyn Gordon.
Oh, okay. All right.
And then, which one? I think it's Cassie Stewart. Is that the right one? The one that has Missy eyes ripped out, the girl in that sequence. She is the girl from the Take on Me video.
I did read that. I thought that was really cool. I did see that. That death scene actually kind of scared me a little bit. I was like, whoa, wow, I didn't expect that.
Yeah, they allude to it on the cover, but the actual execution in the movie is, like, way more freaky. Matter of fact, I'm not afraid of dolls, and I find these dolls. This is why I like this movie. I'm still creeped out by it. I love it. I've watched it many times. I love the score. The score is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, absolutely one of the best scores ever.
Memorable too, right?
I might get dropped. When that happens, keep going, because I'm having some issues here.
Right.
Again.
I will do my
best. It is such a pain in my ass, I swear.
Oh, my God.
We're going to keep going, though. Hopefully this will work.
We're
going to
soldier through.
Yeah, we're going to soldier on through, so maybe we'll get a little faster. But anyway, where do you put this film in your mind?
Okay, I think that if I would have grown up with this movie when I was watching it, and a lot of times if I see a movie I would file this movie under movies I should have seen. And that's because I often feel that an emotional connection, sometimes now I have a harder time developing emotional connections with movies than I did with movies that I've watched forever. And I guess that's normal, but Dolls, I feel like, didn't necessarily grab me the way when I watch Reanimator grabs me, but I'm also into more like kind of mad scientist. I'm into more of the themes in Reanimator a little bit more than I would say I'm into the theme or tone of Dolls. But I think it's great. I think it also just is another example of Stuart Gordon kicking ass in a million different ways. And I would definitely recommend it to anybody that, like you, loves a good horror fairy tale or has to see every killer doll film. And it's because it's going to surprise people and probably give them something they weren't expecting. So, yeah, I don't think there's really much wrong with this film. I think it pretty much knocks what it's doing out of the park.
I kind of wish my friend Emily Intervia was calling in. She's from the Feminine Critique. This is one of her favorite films as well, and she sometimes does introductions in New York at the Alamo Draft House for it.
Oh,
and
cool.
So I'd love her to come in, call in, and talk about she's been on the show on Sexy Witches a couple of times about Dolls
that
and how
awesome.
She loves this movie. So. My friend made me the red doll from the cover as a crochet doll. I have it downstairs, yet she's never actually
awesome.
Seen the film. She's terrified of dolls, even though she makes them for a living, which is kind of funny.
Wow.
That is crazy. Honestly, though, if you're watching Reanimator or Dolls or From Beyond, you really should just binge those three films together because they really are a set.
And just to think that, I mean, you know, a lot of people are lucky enough to have one cult classic under their belt. And to some degree or other, so much of what Stuart Gordon did resonates with a lot of people. And I think those three films right there, just bang, 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 right in a row, that's pretty, it's pretty impressive feat in itself.
Yeah, it really is. And you get two of them, you have Jeffrey Combs in. I mean, and then
one of them.
I love
has,
Jeffrey Combs.
Yeah, so it's wonderful. So let's change gears.
All right.
So
we can change.
So I was talking about one of my favorite films, and so now I want to explain your favorite film. The thing is at number one on your top ten list, right? One or two?
Yep.
Yeah, number one.
It was
so,
one. I think it was one.
I think it was one. I'm pretty sure you had it at number one. So
yeah, I'm almost positive that I had it at number one.
The film I watched over the weekend for Repo Nerds was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, 2019, directed by Quentin Tarantino, Oscar for production design, believe, right? Was that right? It was at least nominated.
Yep.
So, as an Xer, as all of us are, we all basically came of age with Quentin Tarantino movies, Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction. In particular, I saw Pulp Fiction a couple of times in the theater.
Amazing.
And then you move on. Now, I will be first to say I don't always, even though I love Quentin as a voice of my generation, though I'm literally saying enough about on this one, Steve. I don't love all of his movies. I am not particularly a big fan of Inglourious Basterds. I like Django Unchained until the very end. Same with Hateful Eight. And Hateful Eight was one of those films where I really liked it till the very end, but the ending was so upsetting to me that it made me hate the rest of the movie. So
I agree with the ending on Hateful Eight. I don't like that ending at all either. In Hateful Eight, Django didn't bother me as much.
No, there's only one shot that bothers me in Django. But it's actually for the same reason. Actually, they both, I think, feel really misogynistic shots. But Death Proof, I love, Grindhouse. I saw that three times in the theater.
Oh, my gosh, including, I did too. That's one of the most, I did too. I love Grindhouse.
I went on my own. Then I took my dad, and then I took my friend Fernando. Like, I was like, okay, we got 1 week at this before it goes away. We're going to watch as many times as we can.
That's exactly right.
I'm sure I was like one of six people that paid most of the time to go see Grindhouse this year. So I love QT. I don't always love his movies. But I will say I did like this one a lot better than Gateway. But I do have some issues with it. A lot of issues with it. Yeah.
I'm curious.
First of all, though, I want to say a lot of good things, because there is a lot of good here. First of all, I think Leonardo DiCaprio is amazing in this movie. And even more amazing was whoever was his assistant and did his hair and makeup was just blowing my mind throughout the film. I thought that was absolutely cool. Brad Pitt was good.
He was.
I don't think he deserved the Oscar for what he did, but he was good. But he basically got paid to drive cool cars around L.A., so I'm sure that was a great role for him.
We are in total agreement about both of those performances. I think DiCaprio should have gotten an Oscar over Brad Pitt.
Yeah, absolutely. It was the reverse day. It was completely different.
Yeah.
Production design, well-earned Oscar. I knew it was going to anyways. The casting is incredible. I mean, you've got Margot Robbie and Timothy Oliphant, Luke Perry. I mean, you can go on and on. The guy who played Steve McQueen had huge holes to fill.
Damian Lewis.
Pretty damn good job.
He did.
The one thing he had was so awesome and memorable. I understand, Steve, why the Bruce Lee family was a little upset at the Bruce Lee sequences, but I actually took it as like they do on Entourage, where they play more evil versions of themselves, and that's what he was doing with Bruce Lee. That wasn't really Bruce Lee. That was more of a dramatic interpretation of Bruce Lee for the narrative reasons. because they wanted to establish that Brad Pitt's character could fight and hold his own against the real martial artist. That's come back to play later, especially
with
amazing throwing skills. Maybe they should have toned down the rhetoric on Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee would not have spoken like that. I kind of agree with the family there. Because I love Enter the Dragon is one of my favorite action pictures. So it's got John motherfucking Saxon in it, you know.
That's true. It does. That's the path right there. It's a pin.
So I have mixed feelings about the appearance. Now, the guy who played him looked really fucking good. Like, he looked just like him. And that was cool. Let's see. What else I liked about it? I liked Margot Robbie play as Sharon Tate going to see her own movie. I thought that was really sweet. And it's funny because I'm pretty sure I've seen that movie. Like, I'm positive I've seen it. Yeah, The Wrecking Crew. I've never seen that movie. I saw a version of it. I'm pretty sure I saw that film. I remember those scenes. So I was like, okay.
I've never seen it. I need to see it.
Here's where I find that, and QT has been doing this for last film as well. I find his movies with part of my vernacular. It's like he's standing in front of the camera and whacking off.
Yeah, that's true.
And I appreciate it some because he's rich enough now that he can laugh off on camera and no one gives a fuck. But at the same time, it's like, he's always had, for example, his foot fetish, okay? Kind of famous.
This time,
it was so over the fucking top, dude.
It really was distracting.
Like that in the movie theater when they're watching their film, they would drift their feet over the seat next to them, people. We know that. They wouldn't put their feet in the view so you can't see them. The girls are putting their feet up on Brad Pitt's stash and there are lots of shots of feet walking, which is okay. The feet walking part is more like a PP. Really, really. I mean, it's death proof. He needs to take it back a notch on the feet fetish. Really, I'm not shaming the kink. I'm not shaming the kink.
No, it's fine. I'm not shaming anyone. I agree with you though. When I rewatched it, especially the last time I rewatched it, just last week as well, it was distracting. Yeah.
It's distracting, and so I found the whole feet thing. Both Paul and I were like, no. Every time it happens. Now, I absolutely adored the sequences where they were shooting the Western. I think that was my favorite scenes in the whole movie, where they got to actually pretend like they were on a set. And that fringe coat is just, and the way that Leo looks in those scenes, so mad. That part worked. All of it.
It's so good. Yeah, that's the best.
It's fun. It's a fun film. It's definitely a fairy tale film. So, which brings us to the ending, which we should discuss. Spoiler alert, if you have not known anything about the Manson family or this movie, go watch the movie, go read about Manson, and come back, because it matters. All right, that seems
really
said.
Does.
How do you feel about the end of the film?
Well, I think we're going to part ways here, because I can tell you why I loved it. I like the ending because I hate the Manson family, for one. And I hate Charlie Manson, and I don't like the Charlie Manson obsession that a lot of people I know have. And it's just, he is a figure in pop culture that we can't erase. And I think this also goes back to, you don't really like Inglourious Basterds, and I do, where he, spoiler alert, but you're late to the party on this one. He, in World War II, in a movie theater, I felt this was really, kind of the same. He's doing the same thing here with that, and I really, the end of it I thought was really sweet after all the violence and mayhem, and I just always think to myself, man, what if that's what really would have happened that night, and Sharon Tate, would have been okay. And I don't know, maybe that's a little exploitative, I'm sure it is, but at the same time, I don't know, I find it weirdly moving, as ridiculous as it is, because I just get a kick out of it may sound cruel, but I do get a kick out of seeing Brad Pitt kill these kind of characters of those kids, you know, even if they are kind of cartoonish. It just, I think it really works, but I did notice after, especially after the first time when it came out, a lot of people have problems with that ending. Seems to be kind of split.
Okay, so I know there's some what if thing happening. What if they went to the house
right.
next door where the action picture star and the stuntman hung out and drank a lot of drinks? What would happen if that happened instead of them going to Sharon Tate's house? That's the ego that's going on here. I didn't hate that part of it because, yeah, the chances are that they went to a different house was pretty fucking high. However, it was Charlie Manson knew the previous owner, and that's why they targeted that house in the first place. They even mentioned it.
That's true.
Yeah,
the Terry, whatever that guy's name is, he may even ask for him, right?
Yeah.
Earlier on when,
that,
yeah.
They asked Charlie Manson's in it for like one scene.
Yeah,
and it's played by the guy who played Charlie Manson in another movie I saw. So
and Mindhunter.
Yeah, Mindhunter. That's it. Yeah, so
yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah, that's true.
That part was cool.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I didn't hate the ending like I did in Glorious Bastards. Okay, like I thought that you know the Inglourious Basterds was definitely like the revisionist history. This is definitely revisionist history. But I didn't love it either because I was like, okay, well, it's not what really happened. And I thought QT once again. The whole point of that is he just wanted to kill the girl who killed Sharon Tate with a dog. I mean, that dog is so cute. Brad Pitt's dog deserves a fucking Oscar. Like, that dog, his performance is the best in the movie. I love this
that
dog
was
so
awesome,
much.
Right?
It was a great fucking dog. He just wanted to kill, what's her name, Bitchface, the one that stabbed Sharon Tate to death with a dog. I am positive that's why he did that scene, because he really, really made us watch her get mauled.
Yes, he did, too.
I mean, granted,
very uncomfortable.
The dog it only gets the assist, in the end, Leo gets the shot, gets the win on that one. But, I think that's what that was for. But it is interesting because at the end of the film, he goes has the three next door neighbors, which were Sharon Tate and her two friends, who were all murdered, by the way, by the Manson family, if people
right.
know that. When Sharon Tate's voice came across the security intercom at the end of the movie, I got really emotional.
I did, too. That's where it gets me. I can't really explain it.
I can, I think. I think this is why Quentin did this. And he feels, and I feel the same way, Roman Polanski is one of the most inspiring directors in my life. I love his movies. I love what he did. I love his vision. Rosemary's Baby might be best dream sequences I've ever seen in a movie. It feels
ever.
Really lost them.
Agreed.
Not to excuse Roman Polanski's behavior later, but if Sharon Tate and the pregnant, it was proven, by the way, almost 9 months pregnant when she was murdered.
Yeah.
So the baby died.
I mean, it's
just
horrific.
Like,
just horrific.
What if Sharon Tate survived? What if Roman Polanski never made that terrible mistake later on at Jack Nicholson's house? What if none of that happened and Roman Polanski is treated like we treat Stanley Kubrick or any of those other people? Yeah.
It would be a world that, like I said, and I'm also not excusing what happened later on, but it would be a much better world because growing up, I have to stop myself from saying, I've actually come around to just saying it again, but I have to, you know, you feel like an asterisk or you have to get ready to defend when you admit that maybe Polanski is your favorite filmmaker. As I, you know, I've gotten into a lot of, I've probably lost friends because of that argument, but it would be a much happier world, I feel like.
Here's the thing, Quentin Tarantino movies, they're all produced by Harvey Weinstein. Am I supposed to judge the movie based on the producer? I don't know.
Now, it's a little different with Polanski because he's the director, so obviously he's more hands-on in the film. But I can't say that the films suck. They don't.
No, they're so good.
He might suck.
They're so good.
He might suck.
Yeah, he
suck.
There's a very good probability that he sucks. You know, so I'll give people that.
Well,
that's fine.
Woody Allen, and nobody stops him from writing books and making movies.
I also really like a lot of his work, and I understand. I do understand. You know, but it just sometimes I feel that some people are allowed to get away with bad behavior that no one ever seems to call them on. But, you know,
well,
there are popular talks.
And there's some controversy with this movie, too, with Hollywood with QT. Because how much does QT, because QT was the darling of Miramax. How much did he know? We know Brad Pitt knew. We actually know for a fact Brad Pitt knew because he actually defended Gwyneth Paltrow, who was dating at the time, from him. That's on record.
We know Ben Affleck knew. We know a lot of these guys knew now.
I mean, now the question is disclosure. These women's careers were, a lot of them were ruined. Your Sabino, for example's career was ruined.
Just ruined.
It was Harvey Weinstein. I mean, would have the men suffered as well if they had came forward in that era? Who knows? I don't know what the hindsight would say, but I'm not gonna dismiss the films that made me who I am because one asshole is spoiling the barrel for me. Does that make any sense?
Oh no! To me, that's the conclusion that I have come to after wrestling with it for a long time. Some people are just going to react the way they're going to react towards you. Even if I share out, like I'd say, just a still image from, Repulsion, which is one of my favorite movies or something, it can always draw somebody out that's upset. And I get it. If you're upset, I'll let people say what they want to say. But at the end of the day, that movie and Rosemary's Baby and a lot of his work means a whole lot to me.
I was taught Repulsion in school, in my high school.
Right.
They showed it to us. Because it was the best, one of the most interesting viewpoint, a movie from a viewpoint of a woman at the time was very unusual, especially with a man directing. And, here we have this. So, maybe Hollywood would have been a better place if the Manson family made that mistake. And I think that's what QT was hoping, that it didn't go down the way it did, but it did go down that way. You know, and Charity died, her daughter died, her friend died, her ex-husband died, and her boyfriend and his girlfriend died. They all died. It was
viciously.
This is murder that still affects us to this day. I mean, and Charlie Manson. Oh, my God. I think that's been – so I understand how QT feels, and I think that's why I give the ending more – I'm not fully giving it 100% pass, but I am giving it a pass, if that makes any sense.
More than you'd give Bastards a pass, right?
More than I give Bastards a pass. Definitely more than I give Hateful Eight a pass. Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
QT needs to step down on the misogyny thing. He started to piss me off on that thing because he's done some things that are absolutely terrible. There's a line of dialogue that Eli Roth says in Death Proof, which I actually think is absolutely important and should have been cut. That's super misogynistic.
Super misogynistic?
Eli Roth has a dialogue sequence at the bar in Death Proof at the Chili Bowl.
Oh, it's awful. It's awful.
I
know.
It's absolutely one of the worst pieces of dialogue ever written. And it's on the Death Proof soundtrack. And I always delete it when it's on my phone.
Eli Roth, my God.
I don't
think
Eli
Roth think
he's, he's reading as written. You got to remember that. He's reading that as written.
That's true.
Robert Rodriguez allows a lot of free show improv. QT does not allow that. He writes the script.
Right.
He follows the script.
Yeah, so he's reading as written.
And the jingle and chain, at the end of the movie, he shoots the woman, the wife of Leo, and granted, she kind of had it coming. At the same time, it was played for laughs, and I didn't think that was appropriate because it was this odd laugh.
Oh, yeah. That's
a very brutal, really violent scene. And, of course, the hanging the woman in Hateful Eight. By the way, a woman who never murdered anybody. I want people to watch Hateful Eight again and watch me and realize that she actually, not that she's innocent, but she never actually kills anybody in the movie killed anybody before the film. So, and here they are, we're watching the two quote-unquote heroes string her by the neck until she's dead, and they're laughing at her.
Yeah. That's pretty bad. That scene is really hard to defend.
I find that just awful. Other than
it's
that,
pretty
I'm
bad.
I was kind of for it. So
that's rough. I'm sitting here thinking about it. It's awful.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely rough. And so this actually made up for that. I actually was okay with this one. And I actually think this film is pretty fun. Does it need to be as long as it does? Probably not.
I don't think so. Probably not.
But, you know, and also, does he over-fantasize his women? Do all the women in this movie just look like the most amazing women you've ever seen? Yeah.
Right.
I mean, like, Manson's family is like the list of hot hots I've ever seen.
I know. It was like, wow. I was like, I didn't know that they – I've seen the Manson family before. They didn't exactly look like this. This is different.
They were like a glamorous Manson family. Holy shit.
It's true. It's a glamorous life, I guess.
I do like how they were calling Brad Pitt an old man, because technically, yeah, he is. He's in his 50s.
Yeah.
And they're like teenagers.
Yeah, Brad, yeah.
So technically,
that's true.
They still got it. I mean, they had that one scene where he took off his shirt on the roof.
He
and
just
I was
takes
like,
off his shirt.
Yeah, he just takes off his shirt. And I'm like, all right, Brad, 52, I got that. You got that. I got that.
Yeah, he just... this is the whole purpose of that scene. He just climbs on that roof and slowly takes off his shirt and then lights a cigarette, staring into the sun. Why not?
It's a classic Hollywood shot. It is a Hollywood film.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
It
is a fairy tale about Hollywood and a neon sign and the Batman's drive-in. There's definitely a nostalgic touch to this movie that I don't know if it completely burns it. Because Hollywood in the 60s was kind of scandalous.
I think it's the Hollywood that is solely in his head.
Yeah, it's the Hollywood he wishes it was. I think that is what this movie is about. Once again, he's standing in a camera and whacking off.
Yeah, he's bad for that.
But I completely validate that you would love this movie because it is a love letter to the movie making experience. And
that's true.
You know, and that the Manson family was the loss of innocence of the Hollywood era, which is kind of what it's really about. Because, like, yeah, when the Manson family killed Polanski's family like that,
that's true.
Hollywood never really fully covered. It the Black Dahlia murders, it kind of survived, but it never really recovered from Sharon Tate's murder.
We're still talking about, I mean, there's constant movies, TV specials, you know, people still can't get enough of Charlie Manson.
Yeah, I sometimes wish people would just ignore him, but
he may
here
outlive
we are,
us all, sadly.
Well, didn't he die finally? He died finally.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. But I just meant, I didn't mean that literally, actually. But no, he did die. No, he did die. The world is probably always going to talk about him as long as we're still here, I guess.
Yeah, no,
maybe
he's always going to be on the serial killer's plane deck, you know? It's just kind of how it's going to work, you know? But I would recommend, I would definitely give Once Upon a Time a recommend. Not to everyone, but to the people that I know that would like it, I would definitely recommend it. And I know you recommend Dolls to the right people.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
So,
I recommend Dolls to anybody that likes a good horror film, period.
Yeah, it's a really fun film. So, two good movies, yay. So, before we go tonight, Creepy Lovely just had their launch.
That's true. Yeah. We got an article out on VFW, Joe Bagus' new Fangoria produced film. Got an interview up and got a couple more things coming. So give us a like and a follow, please.
Excellent. And there will be another Sexy Witches. Usually they're on Wednesdays now in the season two, though, with the pandemic, things are been a little crazed. So bear with us. But tentatively, the next date is in a week. That's on the Wednesday, the 8th. I have no idea what the subject will be, but we are getting close to the Magic Steampost, which will be in the next three episodes. So that's
oh,
kind
wow,
of a big
that's
deal.
Exciting.
The final madness.
That's exciting.
Yeah. So,
wow.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that later. You can find me, Elizabeth Catherine Gray, the head huntress, on Facebook. That's where I live. You can find at Sexy Witches and at Repo Nerds on Facebook as well. We also have Twitter handles under there. We also have film groups, the Festy Film Geek Circle, the Halloween Horror Movie Marathon Madness, which is a contest in October, but year-round a horror fan group, and Rogue Saucy Station, which is my science fiction fandom group. So if you want to talk fandom, we have specialized groups, Festy Film Circles more general. So please
join
us there. Those are the podcast fan groups. And if you have any questions, you can always PM me on my Facebook profile. Because now I have honestly been posting a little bit more on the political side, but not really. I'm posting more about to document what's happening out there, because I think documentation is really important. So I'm doing it through the eyes of my eyes and what I see when I'm, you know. So bear with me on my Facebook page. It will pass. Because usually, as Steve knows, I like to talk about, like, fossils and dead graves.
Yeah, it's
markers.
More chronicle of the times, I feel like.
Yeah.
I feel like it's more when I see it, yeah.
I like history stuff more, and that's usually what I post on my main profile. And but this time, I've been posting about the pandemic because, well, it's the most important thing that's probably happened to us in a long time. So, you know,
Yeah. Here
we are. We always have the podcast. There's always movies. We might not be able to go to theaters now, but we can still watch them at home. And we will pull your,
yes,
if you need us to pull your geek card and assign you a film, we can do that. We are the Repo Nerds, restoring Geek Cred One. I almost blew my own slogan.
That's right.
Thank you, Steve, for coming on the show tonight. And thank you, Jamie, for calling in. Woohoo, callers.
Yeah, thank you, Jamie.
Yeah, callers. Yeah, so we'll leave you tonight with the Beach Boys' Never Learn Not to Love, which was written by who? Mr. Steve Wandling?
Oh, my gosh. I don't even want to guess. I might get it wrong. I don't know.
You wouldn't get Charlie Manson.
Yeah, it's Ceased to Exist. They changed the name of it. Oh, well, how did I feel.
You knew that answer. You totally knew.
I did know. I kind of stalled. Deer in the headlights.
All right, so we will get back to you sometime in the end of April, early May for Repo Nerds. Once again, join Sexy Witches on the 8th. And have a good night, good film hunting, and guys, stay at home and binge some movies. We'll talk to you soon. Good night, everyone.
Good night. See ya.
Never had a lesson, I've never learned.